You're listening to the NASM CPT Podcast with Rick Ritchie, the official podcast of the National Academy of Sports Medicine.
Welcome to the NASM CPT Podcast. My name is Rick Ritchie, and I want to say thank you, first of all, for tuning in and listening to what's going on. So just to give you a little background of what we do here, we like to spend a little bit of time going over concepts for personal trainers, and whether that's business, it's programming related, scientific, research-based content application. This is what we're trying to do here, is we're trying to put together a podcast for the NASM certified personal trainer to understand how to refine their business, advance their business, progress their business, whether that is business or whether it is in the science of this application. So thank you so much for tuning in. I'm gonna focus on one question that it's come up several times. One is, can we go over that first phase, the stabilization endurance phase of the NASM OPT model, just to help develop a little bit of extra understanding on what that looks like and how it can be applied. And then secondly, we're going to go into a little bit of programming. So how do you take the NASM stabilization endurance content and make it look like a workout? And I understand that that can be difficult. So there are resources. So you can go to nasm.org and there's a downloadable chart that helps you kind of better understand some of the content that's there. And also in the textbook, there are some things, but let's go over it this way through this medium, because I understand that some people just reading things, like myself, sometimes it's difficult reading things. It's harder to make it make sense. But if somebody can talk about it, teach it, go over it, and then the concepts tend to sink in a little bit better. So if I can help out with that, fantastic. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to do so. Let's get into it. The NASM OPT model, the first level in the OPT model is the stabilization endurance level. And one thing I like about the OPT model is it tells you what its outcomes are going to be. So if you're doing the stabilization endurance level, you know that that's the outcome you're looking for, stabilization and endurance. When you get into the strength levels, you know if you're in the hypertrophy phase, that is the outcome. If you're in the max strength phase, that's the outcome that's going to be taking place in your body. Now, I know some people are like, well, hey, Rick, where's the weight loss phase? I want the weight loss phase, because that's why I come to a personal trainer, not for stabilization, not for endurance, not for hypertrophy, not for this, not for, I want to lose weight. All right. Well, we'll talk about the refinements of that within the programming and how you can take really many of the phases in the OPT model and modify them so that they expedite this kind of weight loss process that you're looking for. And then also to steer your attention a little bit towards that certified nutrition coaching certification through NASM, simply because we know that weight loss isn't oftentimes a gym thing, but it is a lifestyle thing and has a lot to do with food intake. We know that people who manage their diets and exercise are better at losing weight. But if you look at people who are just dieters or just exercisers, that weight loss becomes a little more skewed. So adding both of these into your bank of capabilities would be ideal as you go forward and look at how do I present an entire product to the people that I work with. So it is the nutrition coaching and it is the exercise. But let's talk about the stabilization endurance training. And thank you for those who reached out and wanted to get more information about this. First thing we're going to look at is, let's just go over components of this exercise that that aren't resistance training. So the first thing we'll look at is flexibility training. And flexibility training, core training, balance, plyometric training, even speed, agility, and quickness can be added before you even get to the resistance training protocols. And all of that would really be considered kind of like a warm-up for everything else that you're doing as you prepare for your resistance training. So flexibility might be a warm-up. Rick, hey, pump the brakes, brother. I heard that you aren't supposed to do any stretching before you exercise. And I'd say let's do flexibility based off of assessment, right? So let's go through a series of assessments. If we see that people have flexibility issues, then those need to be addressed to refine movement prior to going into an exercise program. And then once you have increased range of motion, only then can you strengthen through a new range of motion. And it's really hard to get a new range of motion if all you do is stretch, but you don't add any strengthening to it. Now, the other thing, too, that we look at is that all of the research that's done on flexibility training are usually not done on what would be considered clinically tight muscles. And I don't expect you to find a clinically tight muscle as a personal trainer. That's not our scope of practice. We don't need to find clinically tight muscles. But they are also being done with extreme power output. So how high can you jump? How much weight can you lift? Now, in the stabilization endurance phase, that's not an outcome we're going for anyway. We're not trying to see how high you can jump in stabilization endurance. We're not trying to see what your 1 to 5 rep max is when you do stabilization endurance training. So let's prioritize flexibility training for indicated muscles that are tight, short, overactive, and provide length to those overshortened muscles. And then we can start applying our strength training. Now, lengthening or flexibility can be through self-myofascial release, so it doesn't even have to be stretching, but self-myofascial release, highly indicated. We're looking at 1 to 3 sets with a 30-second hold, and you can do this up to every single day of the week, right? So this is not something that you're like, hey, you're overtraining and overstretching. This can be easily applied to your recovery programs as well as to your training programs. So there's not an overstretching or over foam rolling protocol here, but we got to understand why we do it and why we do that 30-second hold. And so for our personal trainers that are out there and we say we got to stretch and hold that stretch for 30 seconds, and even when we foam roll, we'll indicate the same thing where we want you to foam roll, and instead of going back and forth over the muscle like you're trying to start a fire, find a tender point in that muscle and then stay on that for at least 30 seconds. You'll feel a release. You'll feel that muscle just start to release. And if you don't, you can stay on there longer. Don't think that 30 seconds and I'm done. If you need to hold it a little longer, by all means, find it, hold it for a little bit longer. 30 seconds really your minimum amount of time to hold it. And that's just because of this physiological phenomenon that happens called autogenic inhibition. And autogenic inhibition is when the mechanoreceptors say, hey, we've got enough tension, we got enough stretch going on in that muscle, or there's too much pressure going on, not tension, it's not the right word, but too much pressure put into that muscle and the muscles will release. So that's why we do the 30 seconds. And then we go into starting off with core work. And you say, hey, Rick, pump the brakes, man. This is happening again. I was told that core work should go at the very end of my program. Why? Well, this is the reason people say to do that, and it's understandable, is that at the very end of the program, well, your core is being used throughout the entire workout. And the people that say core at the end are correct that core should be done at the end because you don't want to fatigue the core musculature before you go and do other lifts. But it's not a stabilization endurance program, so these people aren't doing these cleans and jerks and these kind of major core kind of, by core, like the core of your workout program lift, not the core of your anatomical body. These core lifts that people oftentimes do, yeah, you need to have core support, lumbopelvic hip support to maintain that. So if you're doing these heavier lifts, do not do core right before. You want to save your core till the end, but think about this also. What are you going to prioritize? So if you want more out of your core, then shouldn't you do it first? And then the other lifts you can go a little bit lighter on. Why? Because you're prioritizing core. Because you don't want to say, hey, let me prioritize core by making it kind of the last thing I focus on. And it's kind of fatigued once we get to it. Now, ultimately, here's what we're doing, and it has nothing to do with fatiguing the core. It has everything to do in the stabilization endurance phase of psh, 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 slapping the core around a little bit and getting it to wake up. Hey, wake up, core. We are about to go do some exercise. And so that's why the core work is done and how it's done and why it's put first in the program, because we know the core is going to work in every other component of the program we're doing in the workout. So I want to wake the core up. Same thing with the glutes as part of the core. You want to wake the glutes up. You don't want to do a glute workout prior to going and doing leg exercises. You want to do maybe some bridges or some clamshells or some bridging clamshells, similar things like that, where you get this kind of pre-activation. You slap them around, wake them up a little bit. Okay, yes, yeah, I'm good. It's the water on the face of the workout, getting you ready to go for what's next. And then we add in a balance component after that. So flexibility, core, and then balance. Balance is, I believe, to be highly underrated. And if you've ever watched me train, then you'll see balance work being put in throughout almost all of my programming. Throughout the entire workout, you'll see at some point one of my people might be doing some balance training. Now, that depending on what phase, but here in the stabilization endurance phase, we'll do things where we stand on a single leg and do frontal plane reaches. We'll do, I call them single leg arm runners, where people are standing on a single leg and their arms are moving back and forth like they're running with their upper body, but they're standing on a single leg. And the goal here is to stand on that single leg and not move your stance leg. Have it completely stable. So you want an activated core on top of your leg so that your core can stabilize from above it. And now you're working the muscles around the hip, muscles around the ankle, and getting these two areas, which are highly mobile. Ankle is highly mobile, hip is highly mobile. So these two highly mobile joints are learning how to better communicate with each other so that we can do a couple of things. One, increase our performance outcomes. Two, protect the knee. Because the knee is not a highly mobile joint, and it's stuck in between two highly mobile joints with a series of really, really long levers, the femur and the tibia. And so when the knee's stuck in the middle of these, you know, ball and socket joint on the top, and then I would say, though not exclusively correct, modified circumduction that takes place down at the ankle joint below. So the balance work gets to be put in there. And when done, you will be surprised at how incredibly challenging that is and how many times people stomp their feet or slap themselves on the backside because it's burning. When the muscles are burning, there's this lactate response. There is acidosis that begins to build up. It's challenging. This is a challenging exercise. And then we add in plyometrics. Now, plyometrics can be modified where almost every person that we're going to be working with can do it. So you don't have to leave the ground necessarily to do a modified plyometric. You just be standing there and kind of do a 6-inch drop. And that would be a modified plyometric exercise for some of the people that we may be working with. Now, when we're working with this, the plyometrics and stabilization endurance training, sometimes we'll refer to this as reactive training. And the reason it's called reactive is because we are not focusing on the stretch shortening cycle, which is what the plyometric is, right? So think about plyometrics almost like pliable, right? So we're looking at a stretch reflex that when you stretch and let it go, there's kind of an explosive component there. And plyometrics focuses a lot on how that stretch shortening cycle, and then how high you can jump or how hard you can throw, things like that. This is really more about landing mechanics. Plyometric training and stabilization endurance level of the OPT model focuses on landing mechanics. So this is going to be something where you jump in the air, and when you land, you got to hold that. And we're going to hold that between 3 to 5 seconds. When you hold it for 3 to 5 seconds and you do 10 repetitions, you're going to feel the burn, right? So you're going to feel the burn. That's going to be there. And then once you're done with that, you can start. So this is just like straight up and down, two legs jumping up, two legs landing. So that is a jump. You can do that. And then you can start changing your planes of motion, right? So you can jump forward, you can jump forward and then backwards, you can jump side to side, you can add rotational components to it. You can start playing games what number on the clock are people going to jump to? You're going to jump to a 3 o'clock. You're going to jump to a 7 o'clock, right? So you can start playing games with your plyometrics when stabilization endurance training takes place. But I tell people all the time, it is not about how high you jump. It is about how quietly you land and being able to do that in good form. So a lot of times people can still land quietly, but their heels never touch the ground. And when they land, they look kind of like a raptor as they're walking around, their knees bent, and their balls of the feet touching the ground. You've got to let your heels go down to the ground, absorb with your ankles, with your knees, with your hips. So all three of those major joints, lower extremity, are going to help to absorb that shock as you land quietly and you land softly. Then you can potentially get into speed, agility, and quickness training after that. And those are going to be kind of moderate tempos. And I'm going to tell you that you can add stabilization into this. So if you're doing things like an agility ladder drill and you're doing in and outs, when you do the outs, you can have them pause, where they just stand on that single leg. So tap, 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 hold it, in and out, hold it. Or you could have them do in and out, in and out, in and out. And then you just cue them, hold, right? So when they get to that outsized phase, then they can hold it there. There are a lot of different plays that could be done here, but you can start incorporating 4-6 drills. However, you got this kind of this focus that you're working with people where you can add this unpredictable component where you're asking for stabilization. So again, this is about control. It is about movement, and it's about clean movement. It is not plyometric or speed, agility, and quickness focusing on how fast everything is in stabilization, endurance. We don't want to focus on the fast of it. We want to focus on how stable, how controlled, and can you do it for a longer period of time than you normally would? That's the endurance component. So this is a nice little cardio component that gets put into basically your warm-up. So you've got core, your flexibility, which could be static stretching or foam rolling, core, balance, reactive or plyometric, and then speed, agility, and quickness components. And then you get into the meat of it, which is the resistance training. Resistance training, you're looking about 12 to 20 repetitions. On this, we're going 1 to 3 sets. And the reason it's 1 to 3 sets, especially if you got a new client, this is a long eccentric phase in our tempo. Now, the tempo here is a 4-2-1 tempo. Now, 4-2-1 is EIC, eccentric, isometric, concentric. So eccentric is the decelerating phase, or the phase where the weight is winning. All right, so you are decelerating the weight. The concentric phase is the lift. So whether that is a push-up or a bench press, it is you're facing down in one, you're facing up in the other, it doesn't matter. It is the lift that's taking place. That's the concentric phase. The eccentric phase is the lowering, and it's actually where the majority of your soreness is going to come from. Now, if we look at this and we say, well, that's a 4-second eccentric deceleration or a negative. That's a lot, especially if you're looking at 12 to 20 repetitions. That's a lot of time doing deceleration. So if you've got a relatively new exerciser and you're doing that much work in the eccentric component, that eccentric phase of the muscle action spectrum, it'd be quite challenging. Well, that's taking place. Be aware, there are several things. One, most injuries take place in the eccentric phase, so that's why we spend so much time focusing on how well your eccentric looks. The deceleration phase is also where a lot of soreness takes place, so be aware of that. You may want to limit at least the first session to a single set of an exercise until you know that your clients can handle it. Don't think just because you are an exerciser and you do a lot of sets that just because you do that, that your client can do that too, because we know statistically that a lot of personal training clients go in gung-ho and then they stop training because they don't feel like it's for them, and a lot of the feedback is because they are too sore and it was too much too soon. So too much too soon, losing business and feeling like you're never going to accomplish anything, you're going to lose a lot more business that way than you are if you lose business, because you're not going to lose business like this where somebody says, I don't feel like I was really challenged or pushed that much. Because regardless of what it is, they're going to be challenged and pushed during the workout. They're going to say that because they don't feel sore after the workout. And if that's what they need in order to feel accomplished, then you can up it. We can take it up a little bit and make sure we build. This is a progressive programming. This is why we do it. We don't give them all the way in to top level and then say, let's back off from there. We start a little bit slower, and we still challenge people. Don't get it wrong. We still challenge people. But if they're not as sore after the first workout, then you can take it up. It's going to be more valuable to be not as sore than to be too sore and feel like they can't come in again. And feel like they hate working out, because we don't want that either. We want them to like it. And then you go into your programming. Now, all of these could potentially just be done in a giant circuit. And what I might do is I might find a core exercise, and it's stabilization endurance, which means there's little to no movement of the core. So you're not moving your core. You might see things like planks are common, side planks, Palloff presses, anti-rotational movements, things where your arms using cable or bands are moving around, but your core's not moving. A floor bridge would be an example, because the spine is stabilized, even though the hips are going into flexion and extension. That would be considered one. Floor cobras. All of these are examples of core stabilization exercises. And then without any break, you can go right into your balance exercise. Little to no movement of your stance leg. So the other leg could be moving, your arms can be moving, but your core and your stance leg are not moving. Then you go into your plyo training. Jump, land, hold, 2, 3, 4, 5, jump, land, hold, 2, 3, right? So we're now getting that workout in, no break, going right into SAQ if you want to add some drills in there. So they're dot drills or single leg drills, nothing even to cue it, or you can add the ladder. All are wonderful components. And then I cycle back through that again usually. So I'll cycle back through and say, hey, let's go one more time, core, balance, plyo, SAQ. I won't add the flexibility back into it, so I'll do the flexibility one time early on and then get into the workout. And then once I do that, get into resistance training. Well, how do I know which exercises to do? Well, I'll say this. Just because you have somebody with tight lats doesn't mean that you don't do lat exercises. It could be totally indicated to do lat exercises. What you may want to do is be careful if somebody has really tight lats and they can't take their arms over their head without their back arching. How many overhead shoulder exercises that you do, or deltoid exercises, because that can start leading to some issues in the shoulder. You can't get full range of motion. If you do, you have to arch your back to get there. That's questionable. So you do want to build into that. You might do some slight reclining shoulder exercises just so you can get your arms over your head. But then we could go through this list, and if you look at the programming template, which we call horizontal loading, it's basically going to say, here's a chest exercise, a lat exercise, a shoulder exercise, a leg exercise, and then you could do buys and tries at the end if you want to add specific arm exercises. And if you want to do that, and then there's a total body exercise is usually the way to start off with it. So squat, curl to overhead press, reverse lunge to row with a cable machine, these type of exercises. And if you go through that, and we start off with the total body exercise simply because it's a stabilization endurance exercise, and we're getting all of these muscles involved as opposed to smaller muscles. And again, if your focus and your goal is weight loss, these total body exercises are going to be highly indicated. And then you're going to have zero rest in between. That's what this circuit is. When you see 0 to 90 on your template, 0 to 90, you have no rest. So what's next? Does that mean I do another set of squat, curl, overhead press? No, that's one really long set. It means that you move right into the next exercise. So you're now going to go into a chest exercise. Well, what chest exercise do I do? Well, it's something that's going to challenge your stability. So it could be push-ups. It could be push-ups on a stability ball with your hands. It could be feet on a stability ball with your hands. It could be a one-arm dumbbell press on a bench. It could be a cable bilateral chest press. Somebody's going to challenge your stability. And then, same thing, looking for that for your lats. How do I create instability, or how do I make it where my core has to work while I'm also doing a back exercise? Or how am I going to add a balance component where I'm adding strength to my pronated foot? Right. So that's one of the reasons we do it. While we add activation to your glutes, so you're standing on one leg. That's one of the reasons that we do it. So their core has to activate when I stand on one leg. That's one of the reasons why we do it. So it might be a single leg squat, you know, curl overhead press. It might be a single leg cable dumbbell chest press. It might be two legs. Because if you can't do it on a single leg, then you're certainly not going to get benefit of it. So you might have to put it on two legs. What's the most unstable environment you can put yourself in and still be able to successfully perform the exercise? That's the question you got to ask. Once that gets put in place, you go down that same list with your shoulders. All right? Are you sitting on a ball? Are you standing on a single leg? Are you kneeling? What is the most unstable environment that you can do this in? And let's be honest, sometimes the most unstable environment that some of our clients will be successful at might be a machine. It might be. So if you want to get somebody doing squats and they're not great at doing squats, and when they do, it's really hard to watch. But then when you get them on a leg press machine, it looks really good. Then let's reinforce those patterns on a leg press machine and then get them up. Right? But we're starting with good patterning. If you have access to machines like that, and it's valuable, add value. Don't just say it's because it's a machine, it's not in my program. Now, I don't have machines at my gyms, so I don't have the option of that. So I have to work through it a little bit better and try to dig into it a little bit deeper. So I might limit their range of motion. They may not go very deep into their squat, but they go into their squat and I can't cue them out of their movement dysfunction, like if their knees knock together, then I have to pump the brakes with that and say, hey, we're just going to limit your range of motion. We got to do what you can, not what you can't. And there are a lot of trainers out there having clients do what they can't do, and they allow them to do it in poor form. We're like, oh, you got really low. That's great. Even though it was a disaster if you were to watch it. So the ultimate goal should not be how low can you get in your squat. The ultimate goal should be, what is the range of motion that I can get in good form? And then can I increase that range of motion while still being in good form? That's our ultimate goal. So this gives you some ideas, at least, of what the training protocols look like. And I'm running over on this one, and I apologize. I try to keep them to just around 20 minutes. They usually go just over. We're about 28 minutes right now, and I apologize for that. So thank you so much. If we want to revisit this and maybe get more into what the programming for stabilization endurance looks like, or any other programming phases, reach out to me. Let me know. You can hit me up. Email me, rick.richey, R-I-C-H-E-Y, at nasm.org, or you can hit me up on Instagram, message me at dr.rickrichey, and also reach out to NASM. Let NASM know that you're digging the podcast and you like to keep up, and give us your ideas. What are your thoughts? What would you like to hear about? Do you want a little bit more science, a little more business, a little more research, a little more? Let us know. All right. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Rick Ritchie. You've listened to the NASM CPT podcast. As a thank you for listening to the NASM CPT podcast, I've got a special offer for you. 20% off of any NASM order. You can use that 20% to get certified as a personal trainer through our CPT program, the standard for the fitness industry, or expand your career with one of our specializations, including our latest one, NASM Nutrition Certification, which gives you the skills to be a certified nutrition coach. Get 20% off your order by calling 800-460-6276 or visiting nasm.org and using the code PODCAST20. That's 800-460-6276, and the discount code is PODCAST20. Start changing even more lives today.